mission, urging President Obama to do this. I'd love to get to the 50,000 mark. You know, every signature counts, but big numbers are symbolically important.
Noam Chomsky signed, Michael Moore, Yvonne Slur, Kathleen Chalfant, mm-hmm. Gina Belafonte, Michael Dukakis, the former governor and presidential candidate.
In some ways, the inspiration for this campaign, because it was his proclamation about Sacco and Vanzetti, the Italian anarchists who were executed in the 1920s by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, that could be a model for this presidential proclamation. And it's at the Rosenberg Fund for Children. That's, if you go to their website, really easy website, rfc.org, you're going to go right to the petition.
Well, we have to leave it there now, but you've raised too much in history, so we have to do a part two to really go through it and what it meant for you to grow up, you and your brother Michael, with your parents executed, and your fund for helping children of imprisoned people. Thanks so much, Robert Meeropol. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. This is Democracy Now!
It's 5 o'clock p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. And the 5 o'clock evening news is next.
KBOO Community Radio is in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. The Give Guide highlights 140 local nonprofits doing some great work. But give to KBOO and Give Guide today and help us highlight the impact community radio has throughout the Willamette Valley. The Give Guide is an easy, secure way to make a gift to KBOO. You get Chinook book discounts, free great stuff, and your donation receipt right in your inbox. If you aren't a KBOO member yet, now's the time to join. Your Give Guide contribution will be matched one-to-one. In fact, extra gifts to KBOO will be matched too. It's a great way to help us secure our challenge match. Go to kboo.fm and click on the yellow banner on the top of the screen. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground Grad School. Classes that begin in January include What Now? Organize, the Inner Bowie Workshop, A Moment of Possibility, Leveraging Difference for Collective Action, and more. Portland Underground Grad School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, teaching classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Turkey and Russia reach a tenuous ceasefire agreement in Syria.
The NAACP has requested that the Senate block Trump's Attorney General appointee Jeff Sessions.
And the U.S. State Department retaliates against Russian harassment of its ambassadors and officials by expelling Russian diplomats from the country.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, December 29th, 2016. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Grace Ann Smith. The United States expelled 35 Russian diplomats and closed two Russian compounds in New York and Maryland. A senior U.S. official said Thursday that the actions were in response to harassment against American diplomats in Moscow and interference in the U.S. election. The Russian diplomats have 72 hours to leave the U.S. Access to the two compounds, which are used for intelligence gathering, will end at noon on Friday. Russia's ambassador will be allowed to remain in the U.S. The State Department has long complained that Russian security agents and traffic police have harassed U.S. diplomats in Moscow. President-elect Trump has called for better relations with Russia. It remains unclear whether he will be able to immediately overturn the measures announced on Thursday.
A single Burlington Northern Santa Fe coal car derailed on Wednesday around 1 a.m. Initial reports put the location at about 5 miles east of Vancouver, but subsequent reports place it within the city in the Riverview neighborhood, which is directly across the Columbia River from Portland International Airport. BNSF spokesperson Gus Malonis said that the railroad put a team on site to investigate the cause of the accident. The team has ruled out track failure. Trains appear to be operating normally on this line Thursday morning. Malona said that BNSF runs between 35 and 45 trains every day on this line, and the tracks are inspected each and every day. The accident site is 3 miles east of the proposed site of the Tesoro Savage Oil Transshipment Project, a plan which is now under review in the governor's office. If approved, that project would bring 5 oil trains every day over the same track. Riverkeeper Conservation Director Dan Sears noted, quote, "We're lucky that that wasn't an oil train, otherwise this could have been much worse."
President-elect Donald Trump met with hospital executives at his estate in Florida on Wednesday and discussed steps to privatize medical care for vets. The meeting included executives from the Mayo Clinic, John Hopkins Medicine, and Partners Healthcare. Cleveland Clinic CEO Toby Cosgrove, who has publicly backed privatization of VA medical care, attended. Cosgrove is considered a frontrunner to head the VA. Veterans groups have strongly opposed previous efforts to privatize VA care. Trump has hinted that he planned to support a public-private option, seen as a major step towards privatization, which has set off alarm bells for advocates. Republicans have long pushed for alternatives for veterans care. They ramped up their efforts to let veterans seek covered treatment outside the VA after the 2014 scandal that exposed an appointment system that disguised how long veterans had to wait for care. As part of the reforms that followed, veterans were able to seek treatment in their local VA hospital or clinic. Wait was more than 30 days, and if the veteran lives more than 40 miles from their nearest VA facility. At a meeting in early December with transition officials at the American Legion headquarters in Washington, more than 30 veterans groups were nearly unanimous in their opposition to privatization.
Authorities investigating the death of an Arkansas man whose body was found in a hot tub want to expand the probe to include a new kind of evidence. Any comments overheard by the suspect's Amazon Echo smart speaker? This device is cylinder-shaped with internet-connected microphones that debuted in late 2014. Like other gadgets, it listens for a user's voice and responds to commands. According to court filings, Amazon was issued with 2 search warrants that were signed by a judge in August, requesting all audio recordings, transcribed records, text records, and other data that may have been recorded on the Echo speaker. Authorities have obtained only the basic subscriber and account information. Smith said Wednesday that his office has had discussions with Amazon, but that the bulk of the request remains unfulfilled. The issue emerged in the slaying of Victor Collins, who was found in his hot tub at a friend's home in Bentonville, about 150 miles northwest of Little Rock. The friend, James Andrew Bates, was later charged with the murder. Benton County Prosecutor Nathan Smith said he has no idea if the device recorded any evidence, but looking for clues is simply a question of law enforcement doing their due diligence. Amazon's website says the Echo streams audio to cloud-based storage after it detects the user's wake word, and that it stops recording once a question or request has been processed. This is a quote. "The Arkansas slaying could be a test case for how evidence rules apply to information from home appliances connected to the internet, such as water meters, thermostats, and lighting systems." That's the end of that quote. This was quoted by Nuala O'Connor, president of the Center for Democracy and Technology, which is a nonprofit group that works on privacy and civil liberties issues. The next court hearing for Bates is set for March 17th of next year.
The National Association of the Advancement of Colored People, or the NAACP, released a press statement requesting the Senate to block Senator Jefferson Sessions' nomination as Attorney General under the Trump administration. The press release went into detail on how Sessions' actions as a politician conflict with the NAACP's fight for civil rights. One instance is Sessions' reauthorization of 1965's Voting Rights Act in 2006 and strict voter ID laws that strengthened voter suppression. The statement also described grievances concerning Sessions' racial insensitivity and his stifling approach on criminal justice reform. The release ended with a declaration to fight against any attempts to unravel the progress earned through the blood, sweat, and tears of our people to enjoy the same rights under law as all Americans.
In pursuit of other news on VA healthcare, KBOO interviewed Al Artero of the American Legion in Portland to get a local perspective. Al doesn't favor privatization, but feels that we need action now, and he stresses a community-based approach.
Proposing to privatize certain aspects of the VA medical care system for veterans. I'd like to get your reaction to that, whether you think that's a good idea or what should we be doing in the, with respect to veterans care?
I want to preface my comments with the saying is that I feel that there's far too many people speaking for veterans on these issues, and I think that that's been something that's been a habit since 2001, 2002, 2003 of trying to speak for veterans to kind of support one ideology over another, and so I'm trying to preface this by saying I don't want to do that. Speaking as a member of our post, I think that by and large most people are in favor of the public model, but really being on the ground here and helping so many veterans that are in need, anything that would actually just make it better is something, I mean, genuinely better, is something that we're in favor of. It's, you know, we have, you know, veterans that are living on the streets. We have people that can't get access to care. And this is something that just needs to get fixed. For us, we work with the VA in ways that we can, in ways that they can work with us. We understand that there's a lot of really great people down there, but their hands are kind of tied, and that's caused us to look for, you know, other models within Portland and new partnerships within Portland.
Al, let me ask you. I think you are trying to work with other nonprofit or semi-public or public entities here in the Portland area. Tell us a little bit about that and how privatization might affect those efforts.
Well, so we work with Folk Time and Do Good Multnomah, and some others. We have contact with Central City Concern and other great folks in the city. And for us, the reason of kind of going down this route is that we believe that it's really important that Portlanders are taking care of Portlanders, and that's not just a function of just the military and helping veterans out. It's really about kind of understanding that these are human problems and that they need human solutions. That these are real people, and that we need to be getting involved with that as Portlanders.
Al, I
would say.
I heard you speak about the impact or benefit from an anti-war standpoint of public participation versus privatization. Could you give me a little bit of feedback on that?
This is really the big kernel that we're dealing with in terms of how many veterans are out there suffering still. We've lost more veterans to suicide than we actually lost in theater of operations. That when we're with our efforts of bringing these solutions kind of closer to home, working with these nonprofits, that it's allowing the community to understanding what the lingering and sustained effects of going to war actually are. That we actually have to live with it, and then we actually have to take as a community some ownership of this. And I think that as we have used support our troops language over and over for the past decade and some change, we have not been taking ownership of the actual wars and the actual fallout and kind of the lingering costs of this. And so I think that with our model of making this a lot more local, that making this a lot more community driven, that the real costs the lingering costs of war will remain in people's minds and make them a little bit more vigilant against hawkish attitudes that may be coming.
Well, that sounds like a great point, Al. Do you think there's any potential advantage to privatization in terms of cost savings or greater access for veterans? Could it possibly be better than the present system in any way?
Well, you know, I mean, some of my more capitalistic friends are going to tell me that competition will drive prices down, that access will be able to be available to more areas within the city. But you know, I mean, it's kind of in the weeds and kind of beyond me. I don't have a degree in economics or anything, but. If it genuinely works, if it's something that is genuinely better, then we're in a position right now where we have people that are dying and we need a solution. And this isn't this, at some level, we kind of have to drop a lot of the ideology talk and, you know, our side versus their side, because there's just real people. And so we're watching this closely. We're going to be interested to see how this goes down. But, from an ideological standpoint, it's something that I'm not in favor of, but golly, I mean, you know, I mean, we feed homeless vets. We try to get them off the streets. We call an ambulance when someone comes in and, you know, had to sleep outside in the cold and they're, you know, in bad shape. I mean, like if it's something that's better, we want it.
Al, we'll close on that. That was Al Artiro of American Legion Post 134 in Portland. For KBOO News, this is Tom Flynn.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Rose City Native Radio at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather will be rainy with a low dipping to 37. Tomorrow in Portland will be intermittently sunny and cloudy with a high of 44. East of the Cascades tonight, it'll be partly cloudy with partial sunbreaks into tomorrow. On this day in 1890, the U.S. Army's 7th Cavalry surrounded a band of ghost dancers under the Sioux chief Bigfoot near Wounded Knee Creek and demanded they surrender their weapons. This came on the heels of the murder of Sioux chief Sitting Bull, who the military attempted to arrest under false pretensions of being a ghost dancer or a militant renouncer of the way of the white man. Sitting Bull was killed in the process of his attempted arrest on December 15th. 14 days later, on the 29th, U.S. mounted soldiers massacred nearly 150 Sioux, predominantly women and children. The quote of the day is from Sitting Bull. "For us, warriors are not what you think of as warriors. The warrior is not someone who fights because no one has the right to another life. The warrior for us is one who sacrifices himself for the good of others. His task is to take care of the elderly, the defenseless, those who cannot provide for themselves, and above all, the children, the future of humanity."
Earlier today, Turkey and Russia agreed to a ceasefire over Syria while pressure from the Assad regime continues. KBOO reporter Jack Petz has more on this story.
Earlier today, Turkey and Russia reached agreement on ceasefire plan for Syria. Vladimir Putin said the truce, which excludes extremist groups such as ISIS and Al-Qaeda affiliate Al-Nusra, was set to begin at midnight local time and would be guaranteed by Russia and Turkey. According to the Kremlin, Putin spoke with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Syrian President Bashar al-Assad shortly before the ceasefire began. The ceasefire would end a conflict that has killed more than 250,000 people, created more than 4 million refugees, and caused half the country's population to be displaced. Russia is a key ally of the Assad regime, while Turkey is one of the main backers of the opposition. Several previous attempts to halt the civil war have failed, but the recent warming of ties between Turkey and Russia may prove to be the change needed. Putin said he ordered the Russian military to scale down its presence in Syria, where it has provided crucial support to Assad's forces, but will maintain a presence at both an airbase in Syria's coastal province of Latakia and the naval facility in the Syrian port of Tartus. Earlier Thursday, Turkey called on Hezbollah to withdraw its fighters from Syria. The group, which has sent thousands of fighters to support Assad, has been playing an instrumental role in Syria's civil war since 2013, mostly in areas near the border with Lebanon, suburbs of the capital Damascus, and the northern city of Aleppo. The group is not likely to withdraw from Syria in the near future, as its leaders repeatedly said their presence there is mostly to prevent attacks by extremists deep inside Lebanon. Putin said peace talks between Assad and the opposition would be held in Kazakhstan next month if the ceasefire continues. This is Jack Petz with KBOO News.
Authorities in the Kurdish Autonomous Region of Iraq have confirmed their intention to hold a referendum on independence from Iraq after the Battle of Mosul is over and ISIS is expelled from the city. 30 million Kurds living in Turkey, Iran, Iraq, and Syria have never had their own statehood, and this coming attempt to gain independence is in the spotlight of Middle Eastern media. Garagan Kumarian reports from the Armenian capital of the city, Yerevan, which would become the nearest capital to the Kurdish capital city of Erbil if the referendum is successful.
Kurdish activists sing an anthem of a state that doesn't exist yet. We are the youth, the red color of our revolution, it says. As long as we are alive, the Kurdish flag will never fall. The singing becomes intensely emotional as the lyrics tell the story of many Kurdish families. Look how much blood we have been forced to shed. Having reached this couplet, one of them, Nihat Kanan, starts stumbling and is visibly overtaken by anxiety.
It's okay. Hey.
Halgurt Mohammed, a medical student and Nihat's friend, managed to grab him.
I know he thinks something, hearing something. His uncle, before 1 month, he died in ice war. I think he remembered that.
Hey, is he okay?
Yeah, it's okay.
Nihat's uncle died in the Battle for Mosul, an Iraqi city that, despite being located outside Kurdistan, has become an important symbol for the Kurdish people. The self-proclaimed Islamic State attacked and captured the city in 2014 on the eve of what was supposed to be an independence referendum in Iraqi Kurdistan. After Mosul fell, Kurdish authorities thought it would be too dangerous to start building a new nation with ISIS only 50 miles away from their capital city of Erbil. The battle for Mosul has been brutal. Nearly 100,000 civilians have been displaced. 1 million remain in the city, caught in the crossfire between Iraqi forces and ISIS. The internet is full of videos made by Iraqi troops and Kurdish self-defense forces. Iraqi troops attack in the daytime, ISIS counterattacks at night. The fighting is relentless. Kurdish authorities say the referendum will be held only after the so-called caliphate is expelled from the city.
Shortly, they will have a special referendum after the fall or liberation of Mosul.
Ara Papian is a think tank director and a veteran of the diplomatic service of Armenia, a country that supports the idea of Kurdish independence so much that it is ready to convert its existing consulate in Erbil into an embassy.
People who speak against Kurdish statehood or predicting that will fail, they say that they are not organized, they are not prepared for statehood. But when we look on Arabs after First World War, they were less prepared, but they did not fail. They created more or less successful countries.
If the referendum is held and independence is declared, Kurdistan would have a territory of around 25,000 square miles neighboring to Iraq, Iran, Syria, and Turkey, a population of more than 5 million people and rich oil and gas deposits. Its army, the Peshmerga, would have a force of 120,000 soldiers. Kurdish activist Nihat Kanan, a representative of the Association of Kurdish Students in Armenia, says the words Peshmerga and Kurd have become synonyms. As everything Kurds do, they do it for their independence, be it on the battlefield or in the university auditorium.
All Kurds, anywhere, everywhere, as we are outside from Kurdistan, we want to help the Peshmerga by the pencil, by the idea. Mr. President Barzani said that we don't want to fight any country, anybody, and we don't want. Anyone, fight us.
Nihat Kanan is one of 4,000 Kurdish students studying abroad. He and his peers are expected to import the knowledge and traditions of statehood from the countries where they study and become future leaders back home. Holgert Mohammed is certain they will succeed.
We are famous with the petrol, with the oil. We are thinking to be a part of the OPEC maybe in the future. But not just that. If you want to compare Erbil with another cities in Iraq, Erbil is the best. In the near future, if the ISIS not come to our country, we think Erbil become second Dubai in the Middle East.
An independent Kurdistan would face powerful opponents, not the least Turkey. With a significant Kurdish population, Ankara fears an independent Kurdish state would set a dangerous example for its own Kurdish-populated provinces. In a recent speech, Turkish President Erdogan stated that Turkey would no longer tolerate military threats near its borders and would send troops to Mosul. He didn't explain who exactly he had in mind. The Turkish army has already invaded northern Iraq several times to fight Kurdish armed groups. Many political analysts note that Turkey seems more focused on chasing Kurds and thwarting their referendum than fighting ISIS. However, former Ambassador Arap Apyan is certain that the Kurds will gain their independence, at least within the territory currently known as Iraqi Kurdistan. When the referendum does finally take place, it will be watched closely by Kurds throughout the Middle East and by the governments of neighboring countries that have thus far refused to recognize Kurdish dreams of self-determination. Garagin Humaryan, FSRN, Armenia.
A neighborhood in the Indian capital of New Delhi, thought to be the world's largest community of traditional artists and street performers, is being forcibly emptied out. For years, the residents of Kathputli, or Puppeteer's Colony, have successfully resisted several eviction attempts. Authorities are now adopting a more aggressive approach and have started demolition. But the artists remain defiant, and as Bismillah Gilani reports, they are mounting last-ditch efforts to save their homes.
Hundreds of men, women, and children run for cover, yelling and screaming, as a bulldozer strikes the boundary wall of Kathputli Colony. As soon as a portion of the wall crumbles into dust, many surround the bulldozer, forcing the driver to stop. Dozens of policemen try to push the crowd back, but they refuse to budge. 40-year-old Mukul says they are being forcibly driven out.
We have told them time and again that we don't want to go anywhere else. This is our home and we are not going to leave it. But they are hell-bent on making us homeless. We know there is no future for us if we leave. There are no guarantees. There are buyers trying to fool us. They want to dump us in the transit camp like trash, and we're not going to accept it.
More than 3,000 families of puppeteers, magicians, acrobats, dancers, and musicians live in Kathputli Colony. And some say they make up the world's largest community of street performers. The specter of eviction has haunted the residents of this six-decade-old slum settlement since 2010. When city authorities entered into a partnership with a private developer for a huge construction project that includes high-rise apartments and a large shopping mall. But this time, it looks inevitable. For more than a week now, the entire area has been turned into a fortress with a massive deployment of police and paramilitary forces. Riot control vehicles, bulldozers and fire engines alongside the armed soldiers clearly indicate aggressive intentions, says activist Himshi Singh from the National Alliance of People's Movements.
I can't understand what the paramilitary forces are doing here. We have paramilitary forces in places where there's an insurgency like Nagaland and Kashmir. Now by deploying them by the hundreds here, what do they want to convey? The people living here are artists who make you proud, but they treat them like terrorists. Soldiers are roaming everywhere here. They go into people's homes by the dozen, make them sign papers and demolish the structures. They are terrorizing everyone into submission.
Municipal officials have been trying to convince residents to move into a transit camp until the construction work is complete. They say all Kathputli families will receive special deals on housing units in the proposed high-rise buildings. Some families, including that of Muhammad Islam, have agreed to move to the transit camp.
The court is the highest authority and has the final say. I am moving out because the court says we should do so and has assured us that nothing wrong will happen to us. Everyone wants development, but if poor people are cheated in the name of development, it really hurts. I'm sure if anything goes wrong, the court will come to our rescue.
But most residents are still refusing to leave their homes. Many of them have serious doubts the authorities will actually keep their promise to relocate them once they leave Kathputli. They can point to multiple cases of broken promises made to other evicted slum dwellers in the city. Others worry about the viability of practicing their art in the limited space of small apartments. Puran Bhatt is an internationally acclaimed puppeteer and arguably the most famous resident of Kathputli.
Here is a group of people who have kept these traditional art forms alive, even in the midst of suffering, poverty, and hardships. But nobody thinks about their survival. If our work doesn't get enough breathing space, it will simply die, and we will be forced to do something else to get by, street vending or maybe rickshaw pulling. After all, we are not educated enough to be able to get jobs where we have to sit at a desk and push a pen.
In addition to the presence of armed agents and demolition crews, local authorities have stopped municipal sanitation services to the area. The resulting piles of garbage and overflowing sewage are turning into a serious health risk. Residents say the move is yet another pressure tactic to make them vacate the area. But for now, most appear to be in no mood to give in. Just how long can they sustain their resistance remains to be seen. Bismillah Gilani, Free Speech Radio News, New Delhi.
It's 5:30. Time for a commentary from Jim Hightower.
An old saying asserts that falsehoods come in three escalating levels: lies, damn lies, and statistics. Now, however, there's an even higher category of lies: a Donald Trump speech. Take his recent address on specific economic policies he would push to benefit hard-hit working families, including an almost hilarious discourse on the rank unfairness of the estate tax. No family will have to pay the death tax, he solemnly pledged, adding that American workers have paid taxes their whole lives and they should not be taxed again at death. But wait, workers are not taxed at death. The first $5.4 million of any deceased person's estate is already exempt from this tax, meaning 99.8% of Americans pay absolutely zero. And the tiny percentage of families who do pay estate taxes are multimillionaires, not workers. Trump knows this, so he's lying, shamefully trying to deceive real workers into thinking he's standing for them when, in fact, it's his own wealth he's protecting. In the same speech, he offered a new child care tax break to help working families, quote, by allowing parents to fully deduct child care costs from their taxes. Trump said that his daughter Ivanka urged him to provide this helping hand to working parents because, quote, she feels so strongly about this. But wait again. 70% of American households don't have enough yearly income to warrant itemizing deductions. So the big majority of Americans most in need of child care get nothing from Trump's melodramatic posturing. Once again, his generous tax benefits would flow to wealthy families like his, giving the richest Americans a subsidy for purchasing platinum-level care for their children. This is Jim Hightower saying, as an early 20th century labor leader noted, figures don't lie, but liars do figure. That fits the Donald perfectly.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham. With the incoming U.S. federal government likely to be hostile to organized labor, states like California could play a greater role in trying to advance labor rights. Los Angeles, for example, has already adopted a $15 an hour minimum wage. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti says that workers still have allies in states and cities across the country who are not giving up the fight to improve workers' lives, whether they are in unions or not.
In Los Angeles, it was 600,000 people who got a raise, and most of them are not union members yet. So we know we are doing this for our brothers and sisters who don't have the luxury yet of a union, don't have that voice behind them.
Garcetti echoes what many state and local leaders already know, that what's good for workers and their unions is good for America and the economy.
We know this is good for business. We know this is good for business. We looked in Los Angeles before we raised the wage, and every city that had done this hadn't lost jobs, they added jobs. Now why? Because when people who are just skating by are making the excruciating decision, do I buy some shoes for my kids before the school year starts? Or do I put food on the table? Do I pay off my phone bill? Or can I make the rent? They're not going to put this in a bank account. This is the money that goes into our economy.
Garcetti says raising worker wages and defending union rights isn't some radical, uncharted territory. It's good old-fashioned American values.
We're not actually trying to find some brave new territory, some new policy area. We're returning to some old-fashioned American values that say, if you work, you should be able to support your family.
Amen.
If you work, you should have benefits. If you get wronged on the workplace, you should have somebody who has your back and is your voice in a union. I'm a union member. I'm the grandson of two union members who were immigrants to this country. My other grandfather opened the first union shop making clothes in Los Angeles because he understood that a happy workforce that is represented by our democratic values is a better workforce.
The National Law Employment Project says workers in at least 40 cities and states will get raises in 2017. The federal minimum wage is still stuck at $7.25 an hour because Republicans in Congress refuse to raise it. The workers getting raises in cities and states can thank legislatures not controlled by Republicans and ballot measures for their raises. The biggest minimum wage increase is happening in Arizona, where the state minimum wage is going from $8.05 an hour to $10.
Brought to you by the California Teachers Association, 325,000 educators who know quality public schools make a better California for all of us. Information on how California teachers are shaping a stronger future for our kids is online at cta.org. Workers Independent News is proud to be heard on The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio, live nationwide weekdays noon to 3 p.m. at theunionedge.com.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
CARE, New York applauds NYPD decision to allow Muslim Sikh officers to wear beards and turbans, and also welcomes arrest of suspects in anti-Muslim attack. CARE is America's largest Muslim civil liberties and advocacy organization. Its mission is to enhance the understanding of Islam, encourage dialogue, protect civil liberties, empower American Muslims, and build coalitions that promote justice and mutual understanding. Under the new policy announced yesterday, NYPD officers will be able to grow beards that extend up to half an inch from the face and may also wear a blue turban with a hat shield. Before this, officers with a medical or religious accommodation were only permitted to grow a beard up to 1 millimeter in length. We applaud this long overdue step to make sure the NYPD better reflects our city's diverse communities, said CARE New York Executive Director Afaf Nashir. We are particularly grateful to the work of public advocate Letitia James in advocating for Muslim officers who were previously asked to choose between public service and their faith. CARE New York also welcomed the arrest of a suspect in an anti-Muslim attack on an Uber driver in Long Island. The victim was allegedly attacked late last month after picking up three customers in Melville, Long Island. Following an intervention from CARE New York, Nassau County Police expanded their investigation, reclassifying the November attack as a hate crime.
You are listening to the KABU Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast. We encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories right here at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Tom Flynn, Jack Petz, and Kyle Caressi. The producer is Kanan Schlesinger. Our special thanks are given to Free Speech Radio News. Our engineer tonight is Pooh Epstein. The KABU Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Grace Ann Smith. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on Positively Revolting, Annie and Lynn welcome your calls and opinions on the day's topics. At 9, Political Perspectives presents an in-studio special with former Black Panther Party leader, decades-long political prisoner, and the Real News executive producer, Marshall Eddie Conway. And at 10, it's Flashpoints with host Dennis Bernstein, your daily news magazine. And at 11, Radio Zine brings you the Bradcast, independent investigative journalism, troublemaking and muckraking with Brad Friedman. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Our match ends this weekend, so now is the time to become a new member or make an extra gift. Your contribution will go twice as far, but this opportunity ends when 2017 begins. Go to kboo.fm today and click donate. And thanks to the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems.
Yesterday, Portland's downtown Apple Store was swarmed by a choreographed flash mob organized by Portland Tenants United, who danced to a recording of "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." The routine transformed the Grinch into a greedy landlord who began the action by loudly announcing rent increases and evictions throughout the store, triggering the music and the dancers who held signs reading things like, "My landlord got all my shopping money," or "Rent stole Christmas." And here at KBOO with us to talk about this is from Portland Tenants United, Sheena Sisk.
Hi, Sheena. Thanks for coming in.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
What are the overall goals in Portland Tenants United?
Yeah, definitely to keep Portland housed, and not just for people with more means, but for all people that are living in Portland, to keep their houses and their communities.
Oh, thanks. And how are you involved?
I am a grassroots organizer. I got involved just as an activist and a member. And I work closely with our communications team, as well as putting on events or something that's really cool about PTU is that we use the strengths of each of our members. And as a former professional dancer, I got into putting on a flash mob and other event planning as well that I'll throw myself into.
Well, Portland Tenants United took over the Apple Store with a dancing flash mob. And first off, what was the issue that PTU was trying to call attention to in this form of dance in the store? And why did you choose the Apple Store?
Yeah, totally. Well, definitely to raise awareness of the strain that families experience, especially over the holiday season, just the extra expenses that add up, whether it be the snow days. I don't know about you, but I lost about 4 days worth of work because I couldn't get to work having to commute to Vancouver, for example, or just the rituals that are associated with the holidays, whether it's gift giving or celebrations. Also, I mean, childcare. That's another extra expense that families are asked to make up the difference for, and yet our rents are soaring and our communities are being given no-cause evictions. And so we wanted to use kind of the holiday spirit as best we could to continue the dialogue, to state that, in fact, the rent has stole Christmas this year, and that my rent increase is indeed equal to an iPad, and that, frankly, my landlord has all of my shopping money. I laugh, but, you know.
Yeah, I understand the laugh there. And so this dialogue? Are you talking with the city, the county, the state to try to get some kind of rent control legislation going?
Or... Yeah, PTU uses all forms available to get the narrative across and to push our goal of keeping Portland housed. We are definitely in the camp of using policy change, of working with political leadership, of utilizing direct action, protests, to push the narrative and to ask our especially our city commissioners right now to do what they can do and to enact a rent freeze now, to put a moratorium on no-cause evictions, and to give the relocation assistance that they can and should do right now.
And are you aware of tactics and other things that have worked in other places in the past and trying to use those here?
You know, I'm learning as I go. PTU is definitely the first organization that I've been a part of where we've actually been utilizing political leadership for our advantage. And there's a lot that PTU key players have done behind the scenes in terms of changing who is in power in the state of Portland that most people are not aware of. it's definitely a new strategy that I am enjoying being a part of.
Mm-hmm. And have you been able to identify any specific instances that you can actually do something about, an actual instance of someone being evicted or having the rent raised to the point where they have to move out?
Yeah, we can look to the Ash Street Tenants Association, where they formed a union. They were faced with, I think it was about a $350 rent increase, or if they quote unquote chose not to pay it, they were faced with a no-cause eviction, and the neighbors came together and they unionized, and we actually went to eviction court last month, and the tenants won.